Podcast. I am your host, Dalton Miller, joined as always by my co-host, Corey Kinnon. And we have a fun one today because it is another mailbag episode. We got the questions, we got your questions, we have the answers to your questions. But first, like I said, can't do it alone. Corey, how are you doing today?
I am good. I'm good. I've been going through some family stuff this week, but you know, I got in the gym today and I didn't get on the weight floor. So I do Orange Theory. I got waitlist on the weight floor, which sucked, but it's my first time doing a full tread 50 class, which is like just 50 minutes on the treadmill. And it was actually really good. It was really good. I wasn't anticipating being enthused by that, but I needed to move my body and I'm like, I'm going to do it anyway. And it was turned out to be a nice little workout. So I'm feeling pretty good today.
Move your body. You got to do it. And we'll get into some of the family stuff here with one of these questions a little bit later. But let's get right into it. I have the questions in front of me. I have the people who ask the questions in front of me. This is from Golf is Life on the Blue Sky. Who is your best value picks at running back? Now, I'm going to give one, but I want to hear Corey's first.
Yeah. So I'm not, I have two that I think are really solid value picks who aren't overly old or overly like bombarded with carries throughout their career. Cause I think that matters when we're talking about value. Oh, I know who yours is, but I'm not, it's not the same as me. For me, I'm going to go with Kansas State's DJ Giddens, as the value pick for me. I have a day two grade on him. I would anticipate in this running back class, he probably goes day three, like early day three. I think he could sneak into the comp pick range. And again, he's not like overly explosive and doesn't offer a whole lot in the passing game. I think that's a good place to caveat, but he is 6'1 and 220, 212. That's what he's listed at. So I think he has the frame to learn how to become a better pass pro blocker than he currently is. But I think what I like most about DJ Giddens is he does have that initial burst. And I think his eyes and his feet are really smooth for his size. His feet are really smooth for his size, and his eyes are clean. Like, I don't know if there's any other way to say that. Like, he is patient. He finds backside cuts. I think inside outside zone are going to be his forte, but I don't think gap power would be outside of his wheelhouse as well. So is this a back who's going to play on third downs at the NFL level, at least early in his career? Probably not, but like how many backs play three downs at the NFL level? But I think this guy can start games at the NFL level. And be a pretty consistent 800 to a 1,000 yard rusher if he had the opportunities, right? That the opportunities are what it's going to come down to, even if he isn't on the field in obvious passing situations. When we saw Nick Chubb and Kareem, and I'm not comparing him to Nick Chubb by any means, but when we saw Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt on the same team, Nick Chubb wasn't on the field for passing downs either, and that didn't disrupt his production at all. So it doesn't matter. So I think Giddens is a guy who can be a workhorse at the next level if he's given the opportunity to do so.
Just out of curiosity, who do you think I'm going to choose?
I think you're going to choose ETN.
No. I'm
really?
Not.
Okay.
I'm not. I actually
the other guy that I was almost about to choose then.
I actually think the NFL is probably going to like ETN quite a bit once they get to his tape. They've already gotten to his tape, but you know what I mean. I think that's a name that's going to start creating a little bit of buzz. One that probably won't create very much buzz because he is – everything that you said, a sixth-year guy, he's an older prospect. He also, and this comes into part of the value, wasn't really able to play this year. He played one game and then had eligibility issues, and it wasn't like grade eligibility, but it was a redshirt eligibility issue when he was at, was he at Alabama A&M first?
He was at Alabama A&M first.
Alabama A&M and then New Mexico and then Arizona. I am talking about Arizona running back, or more famously, New Mexico running back, Jacory Kroski Merritt. He is 5'10", 206 pounds. He, from rep one, when I watched him, willingness in pass pro, makes no bones about it. Free rushers, Doesn't matter how big they are. He is sacrificing his body. I love a running back that is a pass pro guy. Now, practically no receiving production in 6 years of college football, which isn't great. But as a runner, I really think that he is fantastic in almost every single way. He's nasty, explosive, violent. He's got good contact balance. He is just balanced in general. He's got impressive flexibility. He delivers blow. He's able to high step through like lower leg tackles. He finishes. The one nice thing that I did see against his old team in the first game when he was playing for Arizona, he had a really nice sideline catch downfield. Tried to get his foot in, couldn't quite get his foot in, but he finished the catch through the ground, through contact. And so maybe there is some receiving chops there, and he was just never given the opportunity. Literally in New Mexico, all he did was pass protect. It's all he did. He rarely ever went out on routes whatsoever. But it taught him how to pass protect. Good patience, good vertical, horizontal, second level burst. He's able to make guys miss, leg churns. He's one of those guys who kind of reminds me of Isaiah Pacheco, where he has that like never say die to his run game, where even though he's not the biggest dude in the world, just over 200 pounds, he's going to find a way to like twist and churn and lunch pail his way to a couple more yards. And then he's also able to create explosive plays at the second and third level with some decent long speed and good acceleration. So I think he's got it all as a runner. 6 year guy, probably a one contract guy at the next level, but I think you can get some really solid production out of him. And he's probably going to go round six or later because of his age.
He's supposed to test Nutty. That was the rumor at the Shrine, is that he's going to test, put up some Nutty numbers.
And if he does, maybe he goes a little bit earlier, but he's a guy who, you know, I personally have graded. He's my running back 13 in this class, but my running back 13 in this class is still like a round four guy. So that's where we're sitting at here.
It is worth mentioning that he only has about 500 carries in 6 years compared to who has 753. That's worth, Ashton Jeanty has 374 this 1 year alone. So he doesn't have a lot of touches. So even though he is a little bit older, he could have some tread left on the, like a decent amount of tread left on the tire still.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, you are right. 33 career catches in 6 years. Awesome. Let's move to the second question then, if you're ready for it.
I am. The second question is from Kyle Winslow, also at Blue Sky. How many prospects do you have true first round grades on? This one is easy because we have our boards up. How many first round grades do you have?
Yeah. So if we're saying true first round grades, I'm going to say that that means a true first round grade based off of film, because I do have an element where I add a little bit of weight based on testing metric using RAS. I think RAS is a little faulty, but I think it's all we have that can give you a concise number to kind of verify somebody's athleticism at this point. So like I use it. So I do use 10% of the weight, 90% film, 10% RAS. So there's a chance that some could also get up in the first round grade area, but I'm going to go based off of film because I would say that's a true first round grade. I have nine.
Yeah.
I have nine. Those nine are Travis Hunter, Abdul Carter, Ashton Jeanty, Mason Graham, Will Johnson Jr., Malachi Starks, Luther Burden III, Nick Emmanuel, and Tyler Warren.
Yeah, we have all of the same first-round players.
Yep.
Which is funny, and something that I don't think gets brought up often enough. We all have different grading scales. We all grade guys differently. And there will be people out there that say that we're stupid. How can you not have 32 first-round grades? Because there's 32 first round picks, but that's not the way that this works. The way that we grade guys is in a base class where everything is created equal. Would this guy be a first round pick? That's kind of how it goes. It's a way to track historically strengths of classes in general. Like this class is not very strong. compared
to how to stack up guys against how to stack up guys against previous classes.
Mine are, well, I have 10 if you count Travis Hunter as two people. But as one person, he is number one on the board here. So that's where I sit with this class as well. And it's funny because I have six blue chip grades in this class, which are like top 10 grades, which six is a lot for a class. So it's a lot of ridiculously talented players and then a really big drop off.
I have two blue chip grades. I have blue chip and top 10 separated out. So I think top 10 deserves them historically, but I think blue chip are like the best of the best historically. These guys stack up well.
Yeah, that's so I don't really talk about it much because it rarely happens, but my like 8.5 plus grades are like first pick in the draft grades. And I have two of those as well. It's Hunter.
Same. That's my blue chip grade kind of.
Yeah, I got you.
I'll caveat that by, I have two players that I think with athletic testing could reach a first round grade. Shamar Stewart is 10 on my board. I think he's going to get there because he's going to do some really nutty stuff. And then Will Campbell is close, but I anticipate Will Campbell testing fairly average to maybe slightly above average. So I'm not quite sure if he'll get there. But those guys are right there on the fringe as well, first round grades.
Yeah. Since we're kind of talking about them already, we will move on to GPOD. AWUND NFL. This is from Twitter. If Travis Hunter was two separate players, a wide receiver and a corner, I love talking about this, where would those players stack up against prospects from the last two draft classes?
Yeah.
Corey, what say you?
Before we start, do you know where that GPOD A and the AWUND comes from?
No.
What during the 1-31 era of the Browns, they were a walking meme. They had like, you know how they have those flag, those banners they'll hand out to the crowd that they open up and they like a whole section will spell something out.
Yeah.
They handed out those banners in the wrong order. They were three separate banners. It was supposed to say dog pound, but they handed the banners out in the wrong order and it spelled out G-Pod all and
that's fantastic.
In the stands. It was amazing. It perfectly sums up the 1-31 season. But yeah, getting to this question. So I can tell you about where I would have him in the 2024 draft. I wouldn't have him above Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, or Rome Odunes. I take that back because I had Rome Odunes and Brian Thomas in the same tier because I was pretty high on Brian Thomas. I think I would have Travis Hunter in that Odunes-Thomas. That Odunes-Thomas tier, but not in the Nabers-Harrison Jr. tier as prospects coming in. So I think he would be in that Odunes Thomas tier. None of the 2023 guys are in that tier. I think all of the 2023 guys, and we can use the like hindsight analysis and say like, well, Jackson Smith and Jigba just made a Pro Bowl, but like, yeah, I get it. Like, yeah, that's true. But like as prospects, I don't think Jackson Smith and Jigba, I wouldn't have him as a top five receiver over the last 3 years in these few classes.
And what about a corner for you? He's number one.
I loved Christian Gonzalez, dude. Christian Gonzalez, I had a blue chip grade on.
See, that's how I felt about Devin Witherspoon. I loved Devin Witherspoon.
I love Devin. He was a top 10 player for me too.
You had a blue chip on Gonzo.
I had a blue chip on Gonzo. Last year's class, Quinyon, he would be above Quinyon. I would say I would have him CB2. Ooh, but I have a blue chip grade on him as a corner as well. So like him and Gonzo would be neck and neck.
Yeah. For me, he's the best corner I've ever evaluated. So there's that. He's at the top. And then when it comes to wide receivers, he would have been ahead of everyone and probably, I didn't have my numerical grading scale yet, but probably pretty neck and neck with JSN. JSN is just the kind of guy that I love. So probably pretty close there. Last year's class, he would have been wide receiver 7.
Oh, wow.
it would have been, I was a huge Adonai Mitchell fan. Huge. So Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Roma Dunes, Adonai Mitchell, Brian Thomas Jr., Ladd McConkey, and then him.
I loved Ladd too. Man, I was a big
fan. And it's funny. One of the reasons why I love my numerical grading scale, and I will bring this up for the rest of my life, most likely, it is the only reason why Brian Thomas Jr. had a first round grade. Because of the traits that he was very good at, because of how I have my scale scaled mm-hmm. and weighted, I didn't love his tape. But everything that he did made him a high grade on my scale. And that is exactly why I have it. To try to take my eye bias out of it and say, hey, this is what the formula is going to churn out, and this is what I'm going to go with for this player. So Brian Thomas Jr., a huge hit for my grading scale and a huge miss for my eyes.
Why I always stress the in-person quarterback wide receiver day at the combine. Like, seeing those guys who don't have nuanced route trees at the college level move in person just like solidifies a ton for me. Watching Troy Franklin move in person was painful last year. A guy who only ran nines and screens at at Oregon. And then Brian Thomas just ran a lot of slot fades and nine balls like at LSU. But watching him move in person, it's like that guy can run every route. Yeah. Same with Javon Baker, who hasn't produced yet for the Patriots, but he's another guy who's like, this guy can run every route, despite being in a Disneyland offense at UCF, a bounce house offense at UCF. So, that's why I always stress, like, I want to see these guys run in person to see if they have the hip fluidity to sink and cut and make these, like, so awesome to do that.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into the serious one, and then we will end on the fun one. This one is from our boy, Brian Maffey NFL, B Maffey NFL on Twitter. How do you guys balance your scouting work and having families? For me, it's a grind, plus my regular job, and balancing that can be tricky at times. Man, it's hard. A couple of weeks ago, after my wife went back to Portugal to go back to work, and even a little bit before that, I spent like 3 weeks. I didn't watch a single prospect. So busy running around, like, just sometimes more important stuff comes up. And that's why I really tried to get ahead in this class. I wanted to get ahead in this class. I did a really good job of it. I didn't want to have to rush through it because I didn't know what this time was going to look like for me. I'm finally finding the time while I'm solo parenting to get back into it and really sit down and watch guys. It's a little bit easier for me right now, just in general, and it will be when I get back to Portugal as well, where I don't really have a full-time job now. I'm running a business. I'm doing the Patreon stuff. I go to the gym and I cook 6 meals a day. I cook for my son as well. So, like, there's a lot. And I watch my son all day, which means it's tough for me to watch film. Yeah. I'm up at 4 a.m. to go to the gym. That's my time to go to the gym. And then I try to get one or two evaluations done throughout the day somehow. My day off from the gym, where I still wake up at like 4 or 5, is where I get a lot of my work done in the morning. And then I just hope and pray that I can find a little bit of childcare somehow to get some actual focus work done. And that's it, man. Like, you for me, it's my family comes first with this. I don't get paid for this. I do this because I love it. And at the end of the day, priorities have to be priorities. We have a responsibility to our families, first and foremost. And so this is something that we love, and it's why we do it, even though it takes up a massive chunk of our free time.
Yeah. Especially
and you have a full-time job. So
I do have a full-time job as well. Yeah. Especially weekends. Weekends used to be like where I used to be able to knock everything out, but like you don't have childcare on weekends. So like I get nothing done on
and
weekends.
You have two children, two under two.
Well, no, my son's three.
Your
now,
son's two. Yeah. Yeah.
I did have two under two. Yeah. Yeah. When she was born, when Elliot was born, but, so weekends, I can't do anything till 7 PM. So I just try to take advantage of that time from 7 to 10:30 ish, before I go to bed. And especially I'm doing the Browns wire thing still too. And I just started charting quarterbacks for reception perception as well. So I probably am a little bit overcommitted that I probably need to figure out, some things there still, and work out my schedule of how to make all of that happen. But, I have always been kind of a night owl as well. And I think that helps. So I do have two nights budgeted where I do stay up late, two nights per week, Sunday night and Thursday night, where I'll probably stay up till like one doing some stuff too before going to bed instead. But that's because I have a hybrid schedule and my work from home days are Monday and Friday. So I kind of like can plan on being a little dreary first thing in the morning when I'm working from home, on the day after I stay up. So I do budget some more time that way as well. But yeah, it is tough because again, yeah, family comes first and then like your house stuff has to come first too. So like the dishes need done, the laundry needs done and all of the stuff needs done. So, it is a little tough. It is a little tough. I think I also have the benefit, I hope nobody from my job is listening to this, of being a program director. So I do just administrative work pretty much 90% of the time at my day job. So I'm pretty much in front of a computer. So that allows me, like, if I need to like shoot up a quick article on Browns Wire, I can do that, or something like that. And that takes care of a little bit of that. Like I don't have to do all of my Browns Wire stuff off the clock as well. So that helps me budget a little bit of time as well. But yeah, I think it's just hard. I don't know if there's a better answer than that other than it's just hard. To do. Eventually I would like to get this to be my full-time job. And I think we're pretty close being like maybe 5 years away, from making that happen, relatively close in the concept of time. But when you work for an agency that has, childcare within the company and you get 55% off, that's not really negotiable, given the cost of childcare with two kids. So, but I do think, you know, we'll eventually get there, but right now you just gotta, I know this is what I want to do long-term. So I just make it happen. I just grind it out. Sometimes it is burning the candle from both ends and, that's probably not always the best or the best boundaries or, rest schedule for myself, but it's just kind of how it is right now for me a little bit as well.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's hard. But you figure out a way to grind out the stuff that is difficult because you love it. Let's end on a high note here. This question was asked, and I told JP, Mr. Acosta 32 _ JP on Twitter, and I believe on Blue Sky is the same handle. If you had to compare any prospects to each of the big three lifts, that is squat, bench, and deadlift, for all of the uninitiated, which prospects would be which? This is right up my alley, as you guys know. And this was pretty easy for me overall. So let's go in that order. Let's start with squat. Who is your guy?
Squat is so easy. He was at the Shrine Bowl, and the dude's pants didn't fit. So Jordan Phillips, defensive tackle from Maryland, is easily my squat option for this question here. The dude's lower half is a freaking semi truck. He's a dump truck for sure.
Yeah. This one for me, I really, really wanted to go with Jordan Phillips, but I didn't want to pick the same person as you. Listen, guys, Mason Graham could have been an easy pick here too. But you know who always squats a massive amount of weight? Running backs. Mm-hmm. And I have a running back here who is 5'9", 230 pounds. Now, did I love his game? No, not really. But that is Texas Tech running back Taj Brooks, 5'9", 230. that young man has got to be able to squat some weight. Got to be able to squat some weight, because short legs, thick legs, you do not have to, your range of motion is just not that crazy. So that is my guy there for squat. Who is your guy for bench, Corey?
Yeah. So for bench, it's another Shrine Bowl guy who, his big thing at the Shrine was that he wants to break the bench press record, because his arms are 30 inches. And that is Middlebury, Division III's Middlebury, Thomas Perry, who is just a really fun ball of energy on the field. But yeah, he's just like very compact. Those arms don't have to travel very far. So I'm going Thomas Perry for this one.
Nice. You know who else has 30-inch arms? Elijah Alston from Miami. He is an edge rusher for anybody who was unaware. My guy for bench press, I have no clue how long his arms are. I just see him moving grown men at a very high rate on the defensive line. One of the best run defenders in this class, that is Ohio State's Tyleek Williams. I think that dude can probably bench a house. So that is my guy for this class.
So I have to let you know that I Googled Taj Brooks squat, and he has a video posted on his Twitter of him squatting 495 pounds.
See, that's not as high as I would think it is.
Not this was last summer, though. So maybe.
Yeah,
maybe,
but we have, yeah. Yeah, but we have Chubb benching 600 plus.
Yeah.
We have Jalen Hurts benching or squatting 600 plus. Like that's the numbers I'm looking for. That's the numbers I'm looking for. Deadlift. Who is your deadlift guy?
Yeah. So deadlift, you want to go explosive long arms, right? So do some big fat quads. I'm going to go with the 6'5", 280 pound guy with 34 inch arms here. And we're going to go with Shamar Stewart. That one seems pretty self-explanatory. That one seems like a walk in the park to comprehend.
Yeah. That's a pretty easy one overall. this young man is 6'05", so 6'5" and 2/8". He has absolutely massive wingspan, 82 5/8". He is the best run defender in this class, arguably the best I've ever watched. That is Texas's Alfred Collins. If you have long arms, you are at an anatomical advantage when it comes to deadlift. Long arms, good deadlifters. Short legs, good squatters. That's how you can spot what a power lifter's specialty is. And he's got those long arms. I see him throw around human beings even more than Tyleek. The problem is those long arms, not really built for bench pressing per se. So he is my deadlift specialist in this class. Another good one could have been Michael Williams, because we know he's got like 36 inch arms. But I am going with our guy, my guy, Alfred Collins. And that is all the questions that we are going to answer tonight. We are almost 30 minutes into this. I still got my late night snack to eat. Corey has stuff to do, I'm sure.
Stuff to do, yeah. Yep. So, yeah.
Let's let the people out. We will be back tomorrow talking about some running backs. How many? We don't quite know yet. We'll see how many we're able to get through. But until then, he is Corey Kinnon. I am Dalton Miller. I love you guys. Goodbye.